You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today we are talking about Pacers-Nets. A game that I'm sure very few of you want to hear more about, and talking more about the Pacers' struggles because they're under 500. I feel like we're harping on their struggles over and over and over, and a little bit of Pistons because they play the Pistons tonight. So trying to blend in two games and you know, maybe optimistically look at their prospectus against a bad team while also saying, hey, this team's kind of in an alarming situation right now. So they just lost the Nets 104-94. If you just are seeing the score or this is the first time you've heard the score, it sounds awesome. They only lost by 10 to a good Nets team. They got smoked. They were down by 30-something at halftime. They were down 36 at one point in this game. The Pacers looked terrible. This was that first half, they scored 30 points. I think it was 30-62 is the exact score at halftime. It was the worst first half I've easily ever seen. So let's get into the nitty-gritty real quick. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Don't forget to check out rockauto.com if you need parts for your car or truck. Tell them Locked On sent you in there. How did you hear about us, box? But anyway, the Pacers just, their offense looks really stagnant. Malcolm Brogdon after the game detailing that their chemistry feels kind of like it needs work and that they're out of rhythm, right? That's kind of like a fallback for players sometimes when they're just missing shots and can't generate good shots. But like their timing is disrupted because the Pacers are being covered differently and the Nets did a good job of that, right? So if you just run through it, Brogdon has 15-6. That's substandard offensive performance for him. Sabonis at 18-9-4, right? I think that's his second time in three games not having a double-double. That's a substandard offensive performance from him. Myles Turner had 3 points. Jeremy Lamb had 3 points. So there's two of your starters combining for 6 points. And on one hand, yeah, they should have more points. They should be scoring better than that. On the other hand, Jeremy Lamb took 5 shots. Myles Turner took 4 shots. Brogdon and Sabonis combined for 37, right? So that balance is really, really out of whack, especially when the first two guys are struggling. So their bench continues to be okay, right? Aaron Holiday and Goga. The Pacers actually outscored the Nets with those guys on the court in this game, which is wild because, again, they were down by 30 at one point, but the starters just got absolutely destroyed. The offense from that unit just looks all sorts of out of whack, and the Nets just exposed some of the problems with them. So they couldn't get it going. Brogdon especially looked pretty weak. Sabonis at least had a few nice moments in the post, and he did not dominate DeAndre Jordan the way I thought he would. So really, the Pacers just could not get it going offensively. And what giving up 104 sounds good. I would say that their defense truly was pretty bad too. I mean, they gave up 62 at the half, and they had absolutely no answers for Kyrie Irving. He finished with 35. He had 17 free throws. And normally in a game like this, when James Harden and Kyrie combined for 27 of 27 at the line, hooey, I'd get a million tweets at me like, wow, these refs are trash, and the Pacers got screwed this game. Pacers only took 11 total free throws, by the way. None of those. I had zero of those because the Pacers' defense was just truly awful. Their point of attack, they would get beat, and then, you know, you got to have Miles come help, and he might foul, or Sabonis come help, and he might foul, or Goga, or whoever. Someone's going to come and be in a bad position to foul. Turner finished with 5 fouls, Sabonis with 3. Jeremy Lamb also had 4, right? He was getting beat a lot himself. So they really struggled to at the point of attack defense. And I think that's been really the crux of a lot of their issues. Like even though their offense has been pretty bad against the Jazz and the Nets, Brogdon mentioned this too right after this game, a lot of their issues stem from bad defense, right? Like if you're coming up in the half court every time, it's harder to get in any rhythm. There's no transition. There's no easy stuff. And their defense just, they can't keep guys in front of them. So then, you know, Turner can come and slow down some of it, right? That's what made him so dominant at the beginning of the year. But now teams know he's coming. And when I asked John Wall about this earlier this season, right, he said that, like, okay, we know Turner's coming. We're looking for that pass in the back corner a lot of the time. And teams have really adjusted. They're getting the kickouts. And instead of just shooting the three, they're continuing to attack off those kickouts now. And the Pacers are really struggling to just stay in front and keep those drives mitigated. And their defense looked really bad in the first half. In the second half, I mean, honestly, the Nets just weren't trying. I mean, that's a cop-out of analysis. But really, the Nets came out in the second half, did not try. They completely coasted. They got outscored 44-64 in the second half. The Pacers, if these halves were flipped, this game would be hilarious. But the Pacers outscored the Nets by 20 points in the second half, and they still lost by 10. They did it. They, you know, the Nets really weren't trying. Credit the Pacers for actually stepping up and actually, like, having some energy, right? Like, McDermott had some nice plays. McConnell had a lot of nice plays in the second half. He finished with 7 rebounds. He had the second. T.J. McConnell, 6-foot-tall T.J. McConnell, had the second most rebounds on the team this game. So they kind of stepped it up, but really their offense and defense are all out of whack, and I think the point of attack defense is a big factor in all that, and I think that their offensive rhythm is just totally jacked up. The Pacers just did not look good in this game at all. I think it was the worst half I've seen from them, like in my life. I don't want to seem too hyperbolic. I'm sure I've seen a worse half, and I just can't remember it. But it was really bad. I mean, I think they were actually pretty close at some point, like 25 to 30 something, and then a big 19-0 run by the Nets, and then another big. I mean, it was just at every turn, it didn't feel like the Pacers had any answer. It was really flummoxing to watch, and they could try different lineups. Nothing really worked. They had Sumner in both halves. He actually played a nice game as usual. So that's a little mix up from normal. That didn't work. I mean, they were down so much it wasn't going to work anyway. But really, just again, no answers from this Pacers team. And that's been a theme for them recently. They're struggling to get the wins. They're struggling to put up consistent performances. And this is just another one of those games. They got to figure something out. They look bad. They're 12-13 now. Which they're still somehow fifth in the East, which is just crazy to me. But the Raptors are now tied with them in record, and the Hornets and the Hawks are both just sniffing right behind them and could pass them at any moment. So I want to zoom out and look at what the hell's going on with this Pacers team. Why are they playing so bad? So let's take a little break and do that. And in the meantime, I'm going to tell you guys about the great people over at Rock Auto, because unlike chain stores that have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers fixing their car, RockAuto.com's prices are the same for absolutely everybody, and those prices are always reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices rather than changing them based on what the market will bear. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic everyday driver, you can get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Their catalog is unique, super easy to navigate. You can quickly see anything you'll need. Best of all, the prices there, always reliable though, always the same for everybody. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts when you could get them for less at rockauto.com? Go check them out right now. See what parts they have for you. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Okay. Yikes. The Pacers are under 500. That is frightening to hear if you are a fan of the team. I mean, 12-13 for the roster they have seems crazy. They were scarcely under 500 last year. I think they climbed out from their 0-3, and once they hit 500, they never went back below it. This is their second worst start through 25 games of the last 10 seasons. The only worse season than 12 wins through 25 games was the year Paul George was injured. They went 8-17. Every other season so that's 2011-12 through this, those 10 seasons, they've been at least 13-12 after 25 or better. This is the first time they've been under 500 without Paul George, basically. So that's bad, and it's really hard to pinpoint just one thing that's changed in the recent losing streaks. That's the Nets. Oh, man. The Bucks, the Pelicans, the Nets, and the Jazz, which, zooming out a little farther, they beat the Grizzlies. They smoked the Grizzlies at home last Tuesday. And then the Bucks are tough, and the Pelicans are good. The Pelicans have won like 5 of 6 or 6. Well, the Pelicans lost tonight, but they were playing well. And the Nets are obviously amazing. They have 2 stars. And the Jazz have the best record in the NBA. So that's a tough run, but they still look like crap for a lot of it. So I think it's more of the style of how they've looked than the losses themselves to me and to viewers that are more alarming, right? Like 12-13 without LeVert and Warren is like, it's bad. And they played better without those guys earlier this season. I think that's where the crux of this is even earlier this year without Oladipo on those back-to-backs, right? He didn't play in back-to-back. So they didn't have Warren and Depot for, I think, 2 games, 3 games earlier this season. And they won those games. They won without those guys. So we've seen them do. They won in Portland the day after they traded Vic, right? We've seen them succeed without injuries. So I don't think it's injuries. I'm not just going to, like, punt this and say they had a tough run, they're injured, whatever. Like, if you want to do that, go crazy. Like, they're going to bounce back eventually. It's the Pacers. We've seen this a million times. But this is more than normal for them. This is worse. Like, last year they didn't have Depot, and they were better, like, good. And I know Warren was healthy, but you know, growth and stuff makes some of that offset. Anyway, first thing here, the balance of shots with their starters is so out of whack right now. It's weird, right? And I highlighted it in this game, and I almost started talking about this when I in the first segment, and I saved it till now. 37 shots for Brogdon and Sabonis in, against the Nets, and then 17 for Justin Holiday, Miles Turner, and Jeremy Lin. That is so weird. And, like, I get that those guys, the three ancillary starters, are just that. They're ancillary starters. They're going to get less shots than Brogdon and Sabonis. But 37 is crazy, right? Then you go back to Sunday against the Jazz. Sabonis took 19. Brogdon took 20. 39 for those two guys. 7 for Justin Holiday. 7 for Miles Turner. 6 for Jeremy Lamb. So 20 for those guys. Basically half of the two that those took. So Brogdon and Sabonis are the best two players on the team right now that are healthy. I get why they're taking more shots than everybody else. I think the Pelicans game is going to be a bad example of this because the bench played like the entire fourth quarter. But I still want to see because I want to see how long this trend's been going. Against the Pelicans, Sabonis shot 13 and Brogdon shot 15. Justin Holiday took a bunch of shots that game. Like I said, the bench played a bunch. But only 6 for Lamb, 10 for Turner in that one. Basically, this has been going on for a big part of this losing streak. So part of it is they're going under on Brogdon's screens now and really throwing off the funk and rhythm of this funk and rhythm. I realized that might have just sounded like I said the F word after I said it. Dating back to the Bucks, last game I want to do this for the losing streak. Sabonis shot 25 times. He played fantastic that game, to be fair. But he shot 25. Brogdon shot 17. That's 42. The other three starters shot a combined 16. So they're going under on these Brogdon screens. They're loading up a little more when Sabonis has the ball. And those two guys have to kind of force things to get a shot for the team. And since they have the ball, they're naturally going to end the possession more. But I think this falls kind of back towards what Brogdon said. Their rhythm's out of whack. I feel like they're not moving off ball as much. They're not going to some of the stuff that Bjorken wants them to do as much. Turner hasn't cut into the lane, I feel like, this whole losing streak, right? Like, he's been a good cutter this whole season. Jeremy Lamb, I feel like, is getting the ball less. Like, 5 shots against the Bucks for Jeremy Lamb. I know Jeremy Lamb is like the fourth option or fifth option or whatever with the starting group, but like the only thing he's really good at is scoring. If he's taking 5 shots, why is he playing? Why is he starting at all? So that's strange. Justin Holiday's been drilling threes all season. Turner is a dynamic big man, always guarded by a center. Like, the balance needs to shift first and foremost to me for those guys, because that is just so weird. It doesn't make sense that those guys are taking basically twice as much as the other three guys combined. So that's one thing. And Derek Kramer, if you're listening, iPacers blog, we kind of talked about this during the game a little bit as well. I'm also on his tweet about some other stuff that has shifted in this losing streak that could intentionally be corrected or potentially be corrected if the Pacers just had to swing the pendulum. We also, me and Derek, talked about more solo Miles Turner minutes. And I my initial reflex thought is like Sabonis is playing so much that they're taking away the Miles solo minutes, because Miles at lone center has been ridiculously good lineups this year. He's played more with the bench than he did in seasons past, or he was. And then when Goga came back, that's what really put the riffle in this. And so Goga playing well individually is good, and his development is good, and the Pacers need to continue to investigate what they have with him. But it's coming at the expense of, you know, even if they're outscoring, I'm just making up numbers. But let's say they're outscoring teams by 2 points per 100 possessions with Goga on the court. That's good. They're outscoring teams. They're developing him. But with Miles with that group, they were outscoring teams by 10, right, per 100. Those are made-up numbers. But just hypothetically, like, that's kind of what's happening is they're sacrificing, like, whatever Goga's minutes are, 8 a game, where they're not destroying teams by as much as they used to be. So that's another factor here. And that's – you kind of got to do a delicate balance of, you know, Goga's really been playing well during this losing streak, ironically. And they got to explore the development, but maybe they need to sacrifice Sabonis minutes somewhere instead, or make sure they still get those Miles solo minutes. He also talked about the ISOing from Domas. I agree. Sumner over Holiday. Yeah, I would love to have Edmund Sumner play. I think he should play over Aaron Holiday. I get that one. I'm not calling for that to be the reason they're losing so much recently and look terrible. Start Doug or maybe McConnell over Justin or Lamb. Yeah, we talked about that Monday. Derek, I hope you're listening. I feel like I'm having a conversation with myself, but I'm talking as you, which is weird. Starting Doug McDermott makes sense to me. I think Justin Holiday would be better with the second unit. Him and his brother play very well together. McDermott would fit more with the starters they need. His shooting, his two-man game ability with Sabonis more than they need.
Holiday shooting in his defense. I think even if they're sacrificing a little on D, they would get a lot better on offense, and they need some stability there. So I would do that, I think. They need to change something. They need to either, you know, balance out the offense more in the way that they were when they were winning a lot. I forget what their best peak record was post-Warren injury, something like 12-8, I think. But now they're under 500. No, that can't be right. But anyway, they're under 500 now, and they need to fix something. They need to get on the right track because, again, that was the worst Pacers game I've seen in a long time. And McDermott maintained, and I believe these guys, right? One, this season is funky with COVID. But two, I believe the guys that they still believe in each other. They've played together for two seasons now. They know how to get back in the rhythm. They'll figure it out. Like, it's the Pacers. They have talented guys. They have an all-star on the roster. Like, it'll be fine. But right now it's really weird, and it's kind of hard to see what they're going to dig and change to get out of this, especially with the first-year head coach that we haven't really seen make a big midseason adjustment. But we'll see. And tonight is a good opportunity for the Pacers to do that. The Pistons have one of the worst records in the NBA. So this is a good chance to do that. I want to talk Pistons, but first, one quick break to talk about two great groups of people. The first one, betonline.ag. We talk about it every day. The official betting sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network. It is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Betonline.ag. Football's over. That's a lot of people's favorite, but they still have NBA, college basketball, NHL, all in full swing over there. They even have awards, TV shows, reality TV on BetOnline. Real-time updated odds and props on anything you can imagine. Prop bets are the most addicting thing ever, so be very careful, but they are super fun, and they have you covered for all the news, scores, and odds for all the sports that you enjoy. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to betonline.ag on whatever device you use. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if you use the promo code we've got for you, Locked On, all one word, betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And another group I got to talk about is 1010. This episode is brought to you by 1010. You might have read about them in Style Magazine, Forbes, New York Times, or many other places. We're excited to talk to you about it here on Locked On Pacers. 1010, an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings that have been designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana. 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com, and when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're ready to make a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, gotta check it out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings is currently available right now exclusively at BlueNile.com. Go check it out right now. The Pistons, man! Finally, a cupcake team for the Pacers. They're 6-18. They're 22nd in defense. They're 23rd in offense. So really, their expected win-loss based on their net rating is 9-15. So maybe they're not as bad as their record. And that's only a little bit behind the Pacers. So the Pacers should not walk into this game thinking it'll be easy. But given the tough murderer's row the Pacers have had since they played, I mean, you can go back to Toronto even. Toronto twice in a row, Charlotte twice in a row, Philly, Memphis, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Utah, New Orleans. I mean, finally, not a really talented team with a stud player. They have a game that they can maybe regroup. And the Pistons are weird. All this year, all their people I follow that cover the team are suggesting sort of that this team plays to the level of their competition, which makes sense. Let's recap the Grizzlies' 6 wins this season. This is hilarious to me. The Pistons' first win of the season was against the Boston Celtics, who are 4th in the East. They then beat the Phoenix Suns, who are 4th in the West. Their third win was against the Miami Heat. Okay, their record sucks this year. They were in the finals last year. Their 4th win was against the Philadelphia 76ers, who are 1st in the East. Their 5th win was against the Los Angeles Lakers, who are 2nd in the West. And their 6th win the other night was against the Brooklyn Nets, who are 3rd in the East. That's so weird to me. They lose to all these bad teams, and their 6 wins are just against the Heat and great rosters. So something about the way they play, they really get up for these good opponents. So hopefully they just do the Pacers record if you're a Pacers fan, because they'll play at the level of a 12-13 team, and maybe the Pacers can sneak out with a win. The Pistons just beat the Nets, though, so the Pacers cannot slouch going into this one. I mean, the Pistons literally just beat a team that destroyed the Pacers. So the Pacers have to come in on their A game. It's going to be a weird one. Some interesting injuries. Killian Hayes, their first-round pick, point guard, hasn't played for a while. Frank Jackson, another point guard, hasn't played for a little bit. He's sick. Jahlil Okafor has a knee injury. Dennis Smith, they just got, is in health and safety protocol. So their point guard rotation is basically just DeLon Wright right now, since they just traded Derrick Rose. So they still won, despite that, against the Nets earlier this week. But they're a little bit in limbo since they just traded Derrick Rose. In that game, they did start DeLon Wright, but they didn't really have a backup point guard. They kind of went with Saben Lee, a two-way guy they have. They had Roddy Magruder doing a little bit of backup point guard stuff. And then they kind of just ran it through their many playmaking bigs. So, all that to say, this could be a perfect opportunity for the Brogdon bounce back game, because DeLon Wright is just an okay player. They don't really have a backup point guard, and if they do, it's Dennis Smith, who isn't that good. So this is a good opportunity for the Pacers and Brogdon specifically to have a bounce back game, because he needs it. They need it. And the other thing about this Nets team is they're really loaded on front court guys who can kind of make plays. Okay, so Jeremy Grant is just killing it this year. He's at 24 points a game on decent efficiency too. He's hitting almost 40% of his threes. This came out of nowhere. He's been known as a defensive specialist for basically his entire career. Now he's a high scorer and a fringe all-star. He's been fantastic. So, one, defending him is super important against this team. I mean, he's their main source of points and playmaking. And, you know, if he's shooting like that and hitting shots like that, he's going to be hard to defend. But they got to slow down a team eventually, and maybe they can do it against Jeremy Grant. Two, Blake Griffin. Okay, Blake Griffin is not Blake Griffin of past. He's shooting 36% from the field this season. He's scoring 12 points on 11 shots. Not that threatening. He's a decent passer for his position. I just learned this from Ethan Krieger of the hashtag basketball. He hasn't dunked in a game in like 14 months. Right? He's not the Blake Griffin we know. He's more of a perimeter guy now. But he's an okay passer. He's an okay playmaker. And he still draws the attention of defenses because of his former talent. Mason Plumlee, another front court guy for them. He can really pass it. All right, Mason Plumlee's not that good in general. I kind of like Mason Plumlee as a player, but he's just like an okay starting center. He's a pretty good passer. Okay? So this team has some playmaking in the front court. One of those guys will always be in the game, basically. So the Pacers have to know the ball is going to be moving, and they don't have the point guards, and this is where the Pacers have struggled, is keeping the ball in front of them. They don't have the point guards to just dominate the perimeter. They don't have the guards to dominate the perimeter. DeLon Wright, again, is an okay player. He's not going to destroy you off the dribble. Neither is Wayne Ellington. Neither is Josh Jackson. Neither is Sadiq Bey. Neither is Svi Mykhailiuk. I hope I got that one right. I've heard his name a million times, but it is so hard to say. Svi Mykhailiuk, if I say his first name, this podcast will have to end immediately out of embarrassment. His full first name. None of those guys are off the dribble threats, so they have to keep them in front. They have to improve in that skill in this game the Pacers do, and I think they can do it again. None of those guys are elite penetrators, but these bigs have a little bit more diverse skill sets than the common front court. You know, they're not like huge talents, but they're unique talents in their own way. There's a reason this team has been beating good teams. So maybe less so keeping the ball in front is the focus. I mean, they still have to do it. They have to get better at it. But just staying home on your man, not helping too much from one pass away, because these guys can really pass it and they can really beat you that way. Their defense is fine. They're Detroit. They're going to, you know, Dwayne Casey teams are going to be tough and try on D, and that's all good. But the Pacers can generate points against these guys. They kind of need to. They need to really share it around. There's opportunities for Jeremy Lamb to have mismatches. One of Mason Plumlee, Blake Griffin, or Jeremy Grant's going to be guarding Miles Turner. I'm imagining it will be Mason Plumlee on Sabonis, so you might have Blake on Turner. That's a great opportunity for Turner to get some more shots. I mean, I'm just – you got to find some more balance. Brogdon's got to defer a little bit. He's turning into a little bit of the Aaron Holiday syndrome, where he's too much looking to shoot at times. So another – again, they don't have the greatest defensive team, this Detroit team. Another good opportunity – for some bounce back games in some key matchups. I think if they can hold Jeremy Grant and Blake Griffin to under 30 combined, they combine to average 36. I don't think there's anyone else dangerous enough or who has go off potential enough that I would pick the Pistons to win. Maybe Wayne Ellington. He's been shooting ridiculously well this year. So he could hit a bunch of threes and swing things the Pistons way. But I think if they just slow down the front court of the Pistons, because they just traded their best scoring ball handler, that the Pacers should win this game, but they're playing like crap recently. So they absolutely could lose it, but they absolutely, matchup-wise, should win this game. I'm going to do something stupid. I'm knocking on wood, but I'm going to pick a Pacers win. I think they break out of this losing streak, get back to 500, and can walk into the Atlanta game over the weekend with a little bit of needed confidence because the Hawks look okay this year. So we'll see. It should be fun. Locked On Pistons, Matt Shook does a great job over there. If you want to go hear about the opposing team's perspective, we'll be back tomorrow to recap all the action from Pistons Pacers. If the Pacers lose to this bad Pistons team, me and Adam will both be back and talking about the sky falling. So you'll want to be there for that. And if they win, Adam will have a normal, happy, we beat a bad team recap, which is always good, and talk about, you know, the team straightening out. Don't forget to go check out 1010, the exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings from 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. That's over at BlueNile.com. They've got diamond engagement rings responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana. 10 design masters have produced a set of 10 uniquely beautiful diamond rings. Go check them out, BlueNile.com. We'll be back tomorrow to talk Pacers Pistons. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a great day, and we will see you tomorrow.